This is a message from Acast.
We don't all get a good innings in life. I'm Andrew Strauss, and I lost my wife, Ruth, to cancer in 2018. One of the hardest things about an incurable cancer diagnosis is talking to your children about it. The Ruth Strauss Foundation is here to help. We support parents to prepare their children to face grief. You can help. Join in our Red for Ruth fundraising campaign. At the Ruth Strauss Foundation, we believe no family should have to face grief alone.
Women are peace builders. Women are humanitarians. Women are rights defenders. Local women activists in conflict and crisis zones around the world understand their communities and the needs of the most vulnerable groups. Women are the engines of peace, resilience, and humanitarian response across the globe, and they need and deserve the world's attention and support. The United Nations Women's Peace and Humanitarian Fund is calling on the world to meet the critical needs and support the transformational impact of local women's organizations working to build a more peaceful and gender-equal world for everyone. Join us today to accelerate funding, amplify the voices, unlock the power, and scale up the impact of women who are responding to crisis and building a lasting peace for all. Learn how you can join the United Nations to support women on the front lines today at wphfund.org/investinwomen.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Unapologetically Black Podcast. And it's been a month and a half, I feel like, of whirlwind traveling. I saw Roshan in London, which was very exciting. Ooh. And we had dinner together and hung out and spent some time. Yeah, it was nice to see you. I'm glad we got a chance to catch up.
Yeah, do you know what? I was talking to my mom and I was like, that's the first time myself and Leanne have spent time together as friends in about a year.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, just the two of us. Yes,
yeah, true. Just the two of us. Yeah, and the only reason it doesn't exclude that was because it was the wedding.
The wedding. And that's what I was going to say, but we weren't alone. So it doesn't.
Yeah. And it reminded me of old times, and I'd come to your house feeling sad and you'd cook me food. I love this for me. I just love it.
No, it was nice. And I'm glad that I got the Airbnb because it gave me a chance to just feel like I was in my own space for a minute, which I haven't done in a little while. So it was good. But how are things otherwise? How have things been since I left?
Yeah, they've been okay. They've been good. Do you know what happened to me though recently? Yeah. I was on a train and a lady was sitting like opposite me. And she was with her daughter in a buggy. And then she looked at me and she goes, oh, would you mind looking after my daughter while I go to the toilet?
Excuse?
And I said, yeah, sure, no problem. Because she wasn't giving me her daughter. Like, her daughter was just in the buggy. She meant more like just watching her.
Just watch her, make sure nobody kidnaps her.
Yeah, and when she went to the toilet, I was thinking, first of all, I felt like she was taking a while. Secondly, I was thinking, how does she know that I'm not the kidnapper?
Yes. Like, that's what I was going to say.
My demeanor, my aura, gave her, this is not a serial killer. Because serial killers don't have a sign on their head.
What gave her the impression that I can trust this woman with my child?
Yeah, and I was thinking, when I was younger, I'm sure people used to say to me, a lot younger, that I have resting bitch face, yeah. And I realized that that must not be true because this lady trusted me with her child.
You definitely do not have resting bitch face, for the record.
Really?
You're quite smiley. Yeah, I feel like you're quite smiley.
Wow, well, not me learning something new about myself in my adulthood. But it made me think, like, in what instance, or like, if you was the mother at that time, because this is a long train, like, I live just outside of London, she was probably getting the train to, like, London Bridge or something, and if she was needing to go to the toilet, this is a very long train journey, yeah? Yeah. But, like, what would you do in that instance?
I feel like in most instances, people would just take their child to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. You could just take the baby and hold the baby, innit?
Yeah, but also if the child was in a buggy, I'd just wheel the buggy into the bathroom.
Yeah, but it's not going to fit. A train,
the train bathrooms are quite big.
Really?
Yeah, the overgrown train bathrooms are big. And I would imagine that they're big for that purpose because they don't have, like, disabled toilets on trains, right? So they need to be big enough to accommodate a wheelchair a baby carriage or whatever.
No, I don't use any public toilet. So me, I've never I've never even looked at that toilet. It could be big, it could be small for a hamster. I would have no idea because I would rather wet myself.
Well, here's the thing. This is a funny story. I physically cannot go to a bathroom, a public toilet. Like, the amount of, like, build up and courage it takes for me to get to that place, it takes too much work. I'd rather just hold it and destroy my kidneys in the process. Like,
do you not remember when we was driving to wherever it was, really far, yeah? And I was dying for the toilet and it said like an hour and a half. And you guys are like, just stop off. And I was like, no, I'm going to hold it until we get to the Airbnb. Because I'm not going no toilet in no service station, no petrol station, nothing. And I held it the whole way there. But then the last 20 minutes, Jumba, I was like...
dying.
I was like, I'm getting that tingly feeling in my face. That means I'm going to explode any minute.
Do you know what I've seen recently quite a bit on TikTok or Instagram is these like portable toilets. It's basically like a box with a toilet seat that you can have in your car and then I guess you throw the waste afterwards. Would you use that? Because it's yours. Okay.
No. I need to see that. No. I'm so sorry. And this will sound trampy and yes, judge me. I would rather just piss in a bush, in a park. Yeah. Because one thing about me, I always have my tissue and my sanitizer.
I can't. A lot of people like pee in the ocean. I can't do it. My body won't allow me to.
You better not come with me to swim. Because you're going to swim in piss. You know when you go swimming and people get out? And I'm just thinking, I'm really revealing myself on this episode. But I'm like, so you're in your swimming suit. You're going to get out. Put your wet feet on the Veruca Bazooka floor.
The nasty
and then go to the
floor.
Toilet with the Veruca Bazooka dirty toilet.
Oh.
We come back. Listen, I might as well just be in this toilet, in this Saturn, yeah, because I know other people here are weird. So we might as well just all wee together at this point. Yeah, the chlorine will save us. The chlorine will save us. Because, no. I just don't tell no one, other than everyone on the podcast now.
I was going to say, other than the thousands of people that listen to us on a weekly basis, I don't know.
But prior to that, I wasn't telling anyone. Wow.
Hilarious. Well, I mean, this fits in perfectly because we're thinking about, or we've been talking a lot about, like, and I think we do this as part of the work that we do anyway, about authenticity and living our most authentic truth and what does that actually look like. And Shan was just a perfect example of what living and speaking and demonstrating her authentic self, no matter what it looks like, right? And I think we talk about that a lot, like, so many people that I know, and I can think of many anecdotes of, especially men, to be honest, like, let's keep it 100, men who are performative about being authentic and men who are performative or people who are authentic, performative about showing that they're healing or demonstrating vulnerability when really it's just a ploy to get people to like you or to win hearts and minds, whatever it is. And yeah, I mean, have you been dealing with that recently? Because I feel like every couple of years we go through this growth and this change and this shift. And I know you've been going through some major shifts and some like life experiences recently. Mm-hmm. And how are you navigating that while still being authentic?
I feel like I'm at a place in my life where I'm really confident in who I am. And I can stand like 10 toes on a lot of my principles and a lot of my morals. And so I don't really doubt that I'm ever living something that doesn't look like my truth. I think you spoke about it on a recent episode. We spoke about grief, and I was saying like I need to be maybe a bit more transparent about how I'm feeling and like things I'm going through. So that's why I paused, because I'm like, is me not being transparent about that being inauthentic? I don't know. Is it being inauthentic, or is it just not being forthcoming? So that's why I took that moment to pause, because I actually think it's probably just not being forthcoming than being inauthentic. Because actually, if someone asked me directly, I'd give them an authentic answer. So I feel like right now I'm definitely at a place where I find being like unapologetically myself really easy. But it hasn't always been that like that at all. And I think I always used to worry about like how people would perceive me. Like, you know, like, yeah, I think I was always worried about how people would perceive me. Like, I think a lot of people, like deep down, we have people pleasing tendencies, even if it's not on like a really, really like huge scale, or like in a way that really like dictates the way we like navigate life and stuff. But I don't really feel like I live like that anymore. I'm very much like, if you don't like it, that's okay, bye.
So, fun fact, this feeds into this. It's actually a fun fact about me, but I think it's a fun fact that applies to people in general. When I was in undergrad, I did research around something called self-monitoring behavior. And it's basically how we perceive ourselves based on what we think others see in us. So if I think other people think I'm ugly, I think I'm ugly. Or I'll behave in a way that makes me less attractive to other people. So it's kind of like self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think the interesting thing is that so many people in the research that I did, so many people had low self-esteem because they perceived other people seeing them as less than. And I think that ultimately is the crux of what matters about living authentically, is like giving zero fucks about what people think about you.
Conflict in that view. When I was younger, I might have even said it on the podcast before, on the old one, I used to have this idea that like I didn't find myself attractive. Did I ever talk about that before?
No, I don't think so.
And it wasn't that I found myself ugly. I was just like, I'm not my type's type. As in like my own, not like men's type. I just don't find my, like what I view as beautiful and pretty to like a high level isn't myself. Yeah. And so it was weird because there was nothing that was telling me that that view was correct. Because actually outwardly and like on the outside of the thoughts in my head, I was always being affirmed the complete opposite. And I don't even know when the shift happened, but I didn't think that at all. Now I'm like, I'm a lame bitch.
But what do you think led to that?
I don't know, because before it wasn't that I felt like I was ugly. I just didn't feel the way other people felt about me when it came to my looks. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that lands. It's like, no one was telling me I was ugly. People were complimenting how I looked. However, I guess I didn't believe it. I didn't take it on board. Maybe it was low confidence overall, but it filtered into like my appearance and stuff like that. Whereas I don't know. It's only because I have that core memory where I'm able to like even remember that in the first place. So I can't think of a shift. I didn't go on a journey consciously of like finding self-love and trying to do these things to like how I look.
Right.
It just so happens that I do.
Yeah, so I was at this dinner, interestingly enough, and Candice Brathwaite was there, and she was talking about the fact that she's had low-cut hair since she was 17. And I was like, well, that's quite brave, because, you know, most women are very attached to their hair. And she was like, nope, I just never really. And it made me think about all of the kind of low-cut hair, bald-headed women that I know in my life and how confident they are. And it kind of defies the idea that you need that attractiveness builds confidence. Like, you need to lose weight in order to find a man, or in order to be confident, or you need to look a certain way, or you need to have a certain hair. And actually, that whole idea of people read confidence on you is, I think, quite real. Like Candace is actually a perfect example of that because she carries herself with such confidence, despite having non-Western conforming whitewashed features. You know what I mean? She has low hair, she's dark skinned, all of those things, but she carries herself so gracefully. She wears bright colored lipstick and it looks bomb on her, despite the fact that so many men tell us that we shouldn't wear bright colored lipstick, aka Michael B. Jordan. Mm-hmm. Was it Michael B. Jordan? No, it was A$AP Rocky. It was A$AP Rocky. Let me not disrespect.
Can I just say, yeah, just quickly, that ages ago you asked me a question on Dig Deep and you was like, who could, if you wanted to be someone, who would it be? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And then I gave different examples of like different singers, mm-hmm. but it would actually be Candice.
Really?
Yeah. Like I think, I know we've definitely done, but I definitely just, you know, put a pin in the conversation. But I absolutely love her.
Yeah, she's amazing. Like, she's so funny.
Considering I don't know her on an intimate basis, the love I have for her is crazy. I'm her biggest fan.
No, but by the way, we were at this dinner, or not at the dinner, we were at the talk before, and literally there were like 60, 70-year-old women. Maybe they weren't as old as 60, 70, but they were definitely like late 50s, early 60s, mm-hmm. who were like, can I take a picture with you? To Candace, of course, not to me. Like, you know, you're such an inspiration. And I'm just like, wow, this woman has real fans. Like, she's not just your typical average run-of-the-mill influencer, which I never thought she was. But like, it was just a testament to how, again, living authentically rings true to so many people, because she is herself all the time, right? Whenever you see her in person, or whenever you see her on her official platforms, she is always herself. And I think that's what people see when they see attractiveness. They see authenticity. They see that people are just living their truth and giving zero fucks about what other people think. And that's a hard thing to do, because sometimes shit is embarrassing, you know?
Yeah. She's a great example of that, actually, because I remember there was a time that she was promoting one of her books. I've seen all these, like, you know, quite polished kind of videos, but in the still, like, Candice Braithwaite way. And then there was a video of her, and she was, her song was on, and she was really winding up. I said, okay. I said, okay. Sis can do both. I love this. Secure the bag, but don't dilute who I am. Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought, and I just, there's little things like that about her that, you know what? You know, I was talking about being authentic, and that I don't really find it a struggle anymore, but when I was younger I did. I think it's because I think I use social media in a really strategic way, and so a lot of the people, or many of the women that I follow, are women that are confident in who they are, women that are authentic in who they are online. Like Candice, as an example, again, did a video the other day where she spoke about, it was really, really vulnerable, and it was her experience of like trying to have a conversation with her dad. And I think in the video she like starts to cry, and it's quite deep, but it was like she speaks about the idea of like being feeling rejection and all of these other like quite sensitive topics. And I was like, for someone who is probably quite aware of the fact that so many people look up to her, that so many people, you know, adore her, love her, admire her, to then put themselves online on this platform that can be quite mean at times and show themselves in such a vulnerable light, and also kind of reveal the fact that they're not perfect. Like, everyone knows that not everyone's perfect, but to actually put that out there is a different thing. I was like, this is genuinely someone who they don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's what her brand is. It's actually just about being authentic. But yeah.
We completely 100%. No, it's 100% true. But you know, as I said, it's not always easy to do that. And I think about, well, I guess I wonder what her journey must have been in getting to that place.
What's your journey like? Because remember I told you before, I was talking to you about my mum. This is like when we first became close. My mum was like, I just love Leanne. She basically said it in short, that she loves you because you're multifaceted, but she'd only know that you're multifaceted to the extent that she was referring to, because you're authentic. Do you get what I mean? So I feel like, similar to Candice, you're also someone who's a great example of that. So what was that journey like for you, especially, you know, obviously you grew up with parents that you said before were quite like conservative, and I don't really necessarily think you particularly are right now. So what was that journey like for you?
You know what? It's similar to you. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I think loving myself obviously was a huge part of it. Like at some point in time, I became comfortable in not being embarrassed or ashamed of the things that I had done and experienced. And actually, Dope Black Woman was a huge part of that. And this podcast was a huge part of that in terms of being able to share in a space where I didn't feel judged.
Mm.
And oftentimes, I saw this meme the other day, or as a TikTok or whatever, and it's like, nice people who are always nice are incredibly dangerous because they have pigeonholed themselves into being a nice person and they hold on to that identity. And I think one of the biggest challenges for me always is not wanting to be perceived as something that I'm not. And so being cautious of, or previously being cautious of how I'm being perceived.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey lovies, a quick interruption to let you know that we are hosting our first ever retreat in Portugal next year, and we'd love for you to join us. Spaces are limited, so if you want to find out more, then check out our website, www.dopeblackwoman.co.uk.
Unapologetically Black.
Growing up, I was kind of like the do-gooder and the play-by-the-rules kind of girl. And, you know, I always kept in line. And then as I got older, I started to I'm having an epiphany right here in this conversation.
Sure, Evolve. It's a safe space.
My parents were very conservative, you're right. But they also taught me to be a critical thinker. They always taught me to interrogate everything that was put in front of me. So yes, follow the rules, but have an understanding of why the rules are important and why the rules should be followed. And the older I got, even though I don't think this was their intention, I started to question those things. And in questioning those things, you naturally question yourself and your reaction and your behavior towards certain things. And I just started to become more passionate and vocal about how I felt about things. And so having a voice or finding my voice, I think, was the beginning to living that authentic truth. Because once you find your voice, I think it's hard to live any other way. The other kind of significant and embarrassing moment for me was, you know, as I've said before, I've been in kind of long-term relationships. I've been cheated on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I had this very toxic trait of being cheated on and quietly cheating back or getting my revenge or whatever it is, but still making the person feel like absolute shit for cheating on me, right? Without taking accountability for my own role in it or my vengeful behavior. And I remember, you know, doing this with a certain partner, and then something hit me and I became overwhelmed with guilt and just, I felt horrible about myself because I was like, I'm doing this to this person that I love dearly and I want to be a part of their lives. And I want them to be a part of my lives and I'm lying to them. And so I mustered up the courage and I was just like, you know what? I know you've been cheating on me, but I cheated on you too. It was only one time, but I cheated. And they were like, cool, we're done. Deuces, see you later. And I was heartbroken. But it made me realize that I couldn't continue lying and being performative about my behavior in relationships. And as a result, kind of like broadening out that scope, being accountable for who I am in life and how those things affect how I'm perceived. Like now by that person, I'm no longer the nice person, right? But I am the honest person. And that is more important.
I think that's interesting because when I was younger, I used to always have this fear about being perceived as the bad guy.
Exactly. And
I think sometimes as I'm saying this, I'm thinking about tendencies that I still have and what it looks like. So for example, I don't think I do this all the time now, but maybe like 2-3 years ago, let's say me and you was engaging in a conflict, like not necessarily an argument, but like a disagreement or something. Yeah. And then we said, like, let's agree to disagree as an example. But I felt like I was being misheard and therefore being perceived as the villain in that situation. It wouldn't sit right with me until I've not convinced you, but I've communicated with you what actually happened or what my version of events were.
Yeah.
And whether or not you then choose to agree with it, side of it, whatever, was neither here or there. But like, I needed you to know that version of events. So more recently, it happened with my brother, which is where I think it's fair to say let him down for like the first time. And because of the way I am with my siblings, we're like, they're like my kids, like they're like my entire world, basically. When he called me to have a really brief conversation, which is when I realized that I'd let him down, I took ownership like straight away. And when we got off the phone call, I sent him a text like explaining everything. And then when we spoke again, another day, like we'd spoken a few times, and then there was a day he was on the phone for like hours, maybe 3 hours on the phone. And I called him, and then before he was leaving, I was like, I need to talk to you about something though. And he was like, what's up? And I was like, do you get why I made that decision? Like, do you get why I did that? Like, do you understand where I was coming from? Because for me, it was like, I don't mind if in that situation you feel let down by me because I'm human, so I'm allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But I also, because of how much I love you, I also want you to know where that mistake came from. And that my intention wasn't to be the villain in your story. It's just that my behavior as a human response led to that.
Yeah.
So I feel like the idea about being a villain in someone's story is something that I've, I guess in that situation, that's not like a terrible way to navigate it. But I think when I was younger, it was really quite consuming. And then I remember reading a quote where it said, like, it doesn't matter what you do in life, at some point you're going to be the villain in someone's story. And that was kind of like a light bulb moment for me to be like, you know, like perception is layered. We could both encounter the same thing. Like someone could come over to us too, we're in the same place, and they start shouting at us, and I'm like, oh my gosh, why did that person shout at us? They're so rude. And you're like, that person was having a bad day. Do you get what I mean? And like, we literally experience the same thing, what we've I guess communicated it or digested it very differently. And so I think I've become at peace at that now. And I think when it comes to like friendships and relationships, that's where for me it becomes a struggle. Like when I want to like lock people off or like not talk to people or do certain things, or like if someone has an issue with me, it's like, that's fine, but like let's actually communicate about what's happening. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean.
I feel like I'm talking, but I'm processing it in my brain at the same time.
No, but I think it's you can justify your behavior, but the reason that you're justifying your behavior matters. It's like, I'm not justifying it to say I was right, but I'm justifying it to explain that it was not my intention, which I think those are two different things.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, you know, we talk about being the villain in someone else's story. How often are you the villain in your own story? Like, how often do you hold yourself accountable for your own bullshit?
Liam, recently I've been living by this idea of doing it for the plot. And the other day, the plot just spun back around on me and I just wasn't prepared. So to answer your question, you know, whilst I'm trying to do things for the plot recently, I realised that I'm becoming my own villain, you know, because I'm chasing this adrenaline of doing things for the plot, and that's not always conducive to my well-being or my goals.
Tell us more. What does that mean, doing things for the plot?
Oh, well, doing things for the plot, what does it mean? It means, you know, having a sprinkle of chaos in your life, you know, a sprinkle of impulsive decisions, you know, a sprinkle of out of character behavior, you know, just for the plot, just for the story. Yeah, doing things for the plot.
And do you want to share more about what that looks like in your life as of late?
I mean, currently I'm not even in recovery yet, but once I've you know, decided to stop doing things for the plot, gone through recovery, we could circle back to the podcast and discuss it. But I think the reason why I did that face when you said it is because I think I'm like, don't want to bring this to the podcast or not. like how much I want to talk about on here. So let me try and think of a different way to say it. The reason why I responded that in that way is because I feel like there is a relationship with a person, with a romantic, platonic, or familial, that I'm upholding that may not be to my benefit. It may not be something that future me will thank me for. And I think the fact that I'm not sure if future me will thank me for it is probably a reason to not participate or engage in that relationship. And so that's what I mean by doing things for the plot, because I know that when I do things for future me, which is something I ask myself a lot, like, how will future you thank you for this, or how will future you feel about this? The fact that I'm indecisive, or the fact that I feel like I have more examples of how it would be negative than positive, but I'm still here, is because I'm doing it for the plot. Do you get what I mean?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think regardless of who you are, I think many people can recognize that, especially when it comes to romantic relationships, but I think it's true in general.
Well, you know, I didn't specify. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but I'm specifying for me, it's in terms of romantic relationships, that I have definitely ignored the red flags, right? And then when you ignore the red flags and shit goes tits up, then it's the other person's fault. And how much is the other person to blame if they were transparent in the beginning, or if you saw the red flags and chose to ignore them? We are responsible for our own happiness. We're responsible for ourselves. And very rarely can you be responsible for somebody else's actions, if ever. And so I think one of the things about living your authentic truth, which is for me has been one of the most difficult things to do, is really being honest about what role you play in your own fuck ups. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a friend, and I'll use a non-romantic relationship. I have a friend, I've known her for a really long time. And out of the blue, she was just like, kind of distant. She became distant. And I was like, well, what's up with that? And instead of being defensive, I tried to do the right thing. And I was like, hey, what's up? Like, I noticed there's a shift. Are you upset? Did I do something wrong? And she was like, actually, yes, there is something that's come up for me, but I'm not ready to talk about it.
Sorry. I shouldn't laugh. As you were telling the story, I was like, yes, she did. That's what she's going to tell you.
And to this day, I have no clue what I did wrong, because every time I've tried to ask her about it, she's not been prepared to talk about it. But, you know, I've had to settle with the idea, instead of what I think many people would do, which is being like, fuck that bitch. Like, I didn't do anything to her. She can just move about her business and I don't know what her problem is. I was like, clearly I hurt this person. She's not in a position to talk to me right now. Let me just take a step back and not be selfish in thinking that I need to know what I did wrong or that I need to do something about it. It is not my place to manage somebody else's grief. It is my place to be responsive and open to it if and when it comes, and to really be That's honest and accountable. Yeah. So it's not always...
Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to say, for me, it's not always about fixing something. It's about listening to people and listening to what they want and what they need. And she needed space from me. And so that's what I gave her.
I'm on the flip side of that situation literally this week, yeah? So I've got a friend that I've spoken to about off the podcast, and I think I spoke about on the podcast briefly before, who I guess for the last 2 years, I've intentionally distanced myself from. And maybe since December 20, no, maybe 2.5 years, 3 years, you know. And maybe since December 2022, I've like really distanced myself from. And we have like social circles that sort of overlap. And we were extremely, really close, like close to her mom, close to her dad. She's close to mine. She could look after my siblings overnight and I wouldn't bat an eyelid. And I don't let anyone look after my siblings overnight. However... I've intentionally been like drifting away for like 2 years, yeah, or longer than that. The reason why I didn't mention it at the beginning, so at the point that I decided I wanted to drift, the reason why I didn't hold her to account or trying to have a conversation is because I didn't have the capacity to engage with her at that time, where I assumed she was going to respond and not take accountability or just be defensive. And also, I felt like there was an incident at play at that time, which warranted her, which I feel like warranted her taken lead or ownership over a conversation with me, and that didn't happen. And so my thing was, the fact that you haven't tried to have this conversation with me, it speaks volumes in itself. And then after that, I was like, I'm just too emotionally invested in, I think, how I'm feeling about the situation to have a conversation that wouldn't, that I could actually like listen openly rather than listen from an emotional standpoint. And then life started happening. And then now I got to the point where I was like, I actually started to feel a bit guilty with this friend. Like, she invited me to her baptism the other day, which is like such a special and big day. And I really, really wanted to be there, and I couldn't be there because of other commitments. If I didn't have other commitments, I probably still would have gone. But it made me, that was kind of like a light bulb moment for me to realize, like, there's a level of like inauthenticness, I suppose, that I'm operating in. It's because I feel a way towards this person, but I'm not communicating it. And it made me think, like, if the shoe was on the other foot, because I know she knows there's a distance now because it's been so long, what would I want from that situation? And I kind of feel like, wipe off on my lip.
I can't see it. I can't see it.
The internet can. All right. What would I want from that situation? And I kind of feel like when I've, and this is not like to shade like your friend, this is just me like pinpointing off the conversation, but it kind of made me feel like the level of friendship that we had is kind of unfair to not allow her to be accountable to her actions and to right her wrongs, even if that extends beyond our friendship. So I don't necessarily think that now I've opened this dialogue between her that me and her are going to be best bums and batty and bench again. No, but I do think that me having a conversation with her allows her to have the opportunity to self-reflect and self and like grow and maybe not act that way accordingly to other meaningful relationships that she currently has. Do you get what I mean?
I guess, yeah, I do get what you mean. And that's very lovely of you, but I don't think you owe that to her. You know what I mean? It is a choice or an option. And this is not in defense of my friend, because I would love to know what I did wrong. And just so I can make amends, or at least be cognizant of, as you said, but I don't think she owes that to me. And this is the thing about living in your authentic truth, is if authentically you don't feel like you need to be a part of her life or her be a part of your life, and that's it, then that's it. You know what I mean? The letting her know is a bonus. That's an extension of the friendship that you feel towards her. But it's not necessarily living your authentic truth. It's actually doing her a favor because you want her to be better, which is incredibly altruistic of you. But I don't think that that's a requirement. Oh, altruistic. It just means like charitable. It means like kind and
But do you know what it is? You know when they say like when you break up with friends, like just remember to keep, I mean, it's not worded like this, but like when you break up with friends, you don't break up with the loyalty you had to their secrets or to like the things that they told you. So for me, it's kind of like with this particular friend that we was actually so close that it's like, I do feel like I owe it to you.
I see. But I
don't think I owed it to her to tell her at a time that I didn't have the capacity to tell her. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas now I have the capacity. That makes sense.
And even, for example, she might have preferred to have a phone call, but I didn't send her a phone call. I wrote a message that I was able to read, use ChatGPT.
Not ChatGPT.
Hi, I'm sending this message to a friend. Please, can you condense it and make sure the tone is warm? Because I know that I like to talk and explain things really clearly. And for some people on the receiving end, that can be like, oh my gosh, there's a big message here. And actually, the level that I'm coming at, the level that I'm entering this conversation is not from a place of like, I'm angry at you, I'm hurt with you. I forgave her. I've forgiven her now. It's been 2 years. Right. You get what I mean? It's actually just like, and I ended it by saying something along the lines of like, I don't want you to feel like I need an apology from you, because I don't. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to be aware of why I've created a distance.
Right, yeah.
I also wanted to be aware if there's anything on your part that led to you behaving in that way. But yeah. Friendship breakups a whole other episode, guys. Make sure you listen to that. That was out in November.
Was it November? That's such a long time ago. Gosh,
I think, it was maybe even before that. You know, I feel like it was like October, November times. We did an episode on friendship breakups, and
that's crazy. Yeah,
I think they're one of the worst things to ever experience. Personally.
They are. They're difficult, and I haven't done them in a very, very long time, or I haven't had one in a long time. Maybe like 3 years or so. I think it's been since my last and probably only real friendship breakup. But yeah, I think going back to the authenticity piece, there is something to be said for at least for me, part of being authentic is also being a little bit selfish. Like being selfish in the sense of like, what do you need for yourself to grow, and being honest about that. And instead of being, you know, because people pleasing is a thing that I think I suffer from, as you very well know. And really interrogating every decision that you do to say, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I think it's the right thing to do? Or am I doing it because I want to please somebody else? And in pleasing somebody else, am I not pleasing myself? Am I not being honest about what it is that I want? I remember I was talking to a friend of mine or a colleague of mine, and he was just like, if someone came to you and apologized and said, what can I do to make this better? What would it look like? And I was like, I don't even know, because there are so many things that I do for other people or with the vein of pleasing other people. Like, what does it look like to please yourself? And that's also another important part of living in your authentic truth, not just being accountable for your fuck ups, but also being accountable for your joy, right? Like, there's something to be said for, yes, being accountable when you make mistakes, but also being accountable for things that you know are going to make you happy and not waiting on other people to give them to you, but giving them to yourself. And so I think there's so many different elements and aspects of how to live authentically in this life.
I feel like people pleasing is a whole other episode that we need to touch into. Because I think it goes like really, really deep. Even in terms of things like when people do nice gestures and they think they're doing it to be nice or for other people, but they're doing it because it makes themselves feel good. And I think that's a really interesting notion. Like, is that actually a nice thing, or does it stroke your ego? It's like giving homeless people money. Like, are you giving homeless people money because you want to make sure you've contributed to making sure that person can eat today? Or are you giving that homeless person money because you know that when you give it to them, the people around you on that bus or that train or on that platform are going to think, what a good Samaritan.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think there's something to be unpacked when it comes to that.
And that's the performative piece as well. Like, it's, why are you doing this? Are you doing this because it makes you look like a good person? Or are you doing it because you should do it and it's genuinely the right thing to do? And that's the difference between authenticity. I think you summed that up quite perfectly. That's the distinction between authenticity and being performative. 100%.
Well, guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Unapologetically Black podcast.
Bye, folks.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
This is a message from Acast.
We don't all get a good innings in life. I'm Andrew Strauss, and I lost my wife, Ruth, to cancer in 2018. One of the hardest things about an incurable cancer diagnosis is talking to your children about it. The Ruth Strauss Foundation is here to help. We support parents to prepare their children to face grief. You can help. Join in our Red for Ruth fundraising campaign. At the Ruth Strauss Foundation, we believe no family should have to face grief alone.
Women are peace builders. Women are humanitarians. Women are rights defenders. Local women activists in conflict and crisis zones around the world understand their communities and the needs of the most vulnerable groups. Women are the engines of peace, resilience, and humanitarian response across the globe, and they need and deserve the world's attention and support. The United Nations Women's Peace and Humanitarian Fund is calling on the world to meet the critical needs and support the transformational impact of local women's organizations working to build a more peaceful and gender-equal world for everyone. Join us today to accelerate funding, amplify the voices, unlock the power, and scale up the impact of women who are responding to crisis and building a lasting peace for all. Learn how you can join the United Nations to support women on the front lines today at wphfund.org /investinwomen.com.